eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want to talk about Wrigley Field a little bit.
Okay.
Once I left Cincinnati, I went to Seattle. I think I got back to Wrigley one time.
Okay.
I loved it. But I want the perspective of someone that played there for a lot of years. You came up to the big leagues in 88. You didn't leave till after the 2000 season. And the psychology of playing at Wrigley. I loved coming there. The day games, you know as well as anybody, the cities you like are the cities that you hit best in.
Oh, of course. Well, yeah.
So if you went in and came out of there with a good series, it didn't matter the city you were in. It didn't matter the ballpark, the aesthetics. It's bottom line. It comes down to hits. I just happened to have some days. It seemed like we fell on the right time. The wind was blowing out more than it was blowing in. I just liked everything about it. Now, I didn't like the playing surface since it's been redone and leveled
back
out.
Back in our day, yeah, the infield that was in terrible shape. You're right.
It was terrible. There were lips everywhere. It felt you were on deck. Like you needed a tow rope to get to home plate. It's like you were walking uphill. Everything was going against you. But like I said, I loved it. Talk about the psychology playing there for a long time. And it's different. This is why I thought the Cubs would never win. I thought all those day games.
Yep.
It's different because as big league players, we're programmed. The schedule is for 5 night games a week, at least 5 or 6. And then you have
anymore,
day games
yeah.
on Sunday. And most people that play in a normal place where day games aren't prominent, you get into a routine and it's like, wait a minute, I don't want to wake up tomorrow at 8 o'clock for a day game. You go to Wrigley, you kind of set your mind for it, but being the home team and that is your life. Explain the advantages, disadvantages. Did you like it?
Well, first of all, you know, Chicago, being a Chicago Cub was, you know, I'm honestly sorry, buddy, that you never got to spend at least one season with the Chicago Cubs. That's how cool it is to be a Cub. And I played on some bad teams. I wasn't on the championship team, we had good players. You know, I played with Hall of Famers Andre Dawson, Ryan Sandberg, Greg Maddux. We had some guys that could hit, but we'd have to beat you, 12-10 because we really struggled on the mound. And here's the thing about Wrigley, and I don't know if you'll agree with me or not here, Booney, but you come in as a visiting player. You got 3 games. So you got 3 day games. A 3-game series is no big deal for an opponent. It's like, man, this is actually kind of nice. But I'm telling you, Booney, I had guys come to first base on that third day on that nightcap of the 3-game series and just say, Gracie, man, I can't wait to get out of here and go play some night games again. And yeah. So honestly, in April and May in Chicago, you played in Cincinnati, you played in cold weather, but not quite as cold as Chicago.
When that wind whips up,
and Wrigley Field faces north. Okay. So a cold north wind blows straight in, blows straight in, and it's the biggest ballpark in Major League Baseball for about 2 months. And then as it starts to warm up, a warm summer breeze blows out. So once you, you know, but it doesn't get really considerably warm till towards the end of June in Chicago. And also, when the wind does blow out, it's usually from the right field foul pole to the left field foul pole. And I'll bet you figured that out. So I always felt like if you were a right-handed hitter, a right-handed pull hitter or a left-hander with some juice to left field, you're going to thrive at Wrigley Field. Now, I know you had big opposite field power, but I remember a couple of bombs you hit onto Waveland Avenue. And, you know, and also when the first thing you did at Wrigley Field, when you arrived at Wrigley Field, you checked the flags, did you not?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember Rick Sutcliffe telling me, he goes, I loved pitching when the wind blew out. And I'm like, are you out of your goddamn mind? What are you talking about? He goes, because I knew I was going to give up some runs. He said, but I knew that opposing pitcher was really, really worried that the wind was blowing out that day. And he was probably going to go out there tight and nervous and give it up. He goes, I won more games with the wind blowing out than I did with the wind blowing in. So, you know, there's nuances to Wrigley Field that nowhere else. And Booney, one last thing about Wrigley. At no other major league ballpark does the weather affect the game more than Wrigley Field because of that wind and because of the cold or because of the heat. It's just the weather affects the game so much there more than any other circular stadium or anything like that. That's just my feeling.
No, I agree with you. I mean, Fenway, it would be affected a little bit. And I think that's because of the bleachers are a lot lower than your modern day big league ballpark.
True.
But you mentioned that Sutcliffe, great point, because when you're the home team, at some point you've got to get over the environment, almost use it to your advantage.
Absolutely.
It's like when Colorado came into the league. Think about your pitchers when you were headed to Colorado. They'd start counting the days down. And back then we didn't have our cell phones. So it was USA Today. Okay, where is my start going to fall? Hopefully it doesn't. But as soon as it's going to fall in Colorado, they're already mentally going through it.
Oh, they had that Coors Field bad back, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
My hamstrings bother me. You know, I'll be ready to go when we go to San Francisco, but I'm going to have to sit this one out. Yeah.
I got this question for you, and I don't know if this is a good, comparison, but I remember this is the early 2000s for me. And I had, you know, I'm struggling with my contact lenses. I've got astigmatism, but I've also got a separate contact lens for, different days, and I've got allergies, and some days my vision's great, sometimes it's not. So this is what I started doing, Gracie. On the way to the ballpark in Seattle, I'd be driving across the bridge, and I had checkpoints. There were certain signs that I would go to, so I'd put my contacts in, drive to the ballpark, and there were certain signs. I knew if they were very bright and lit up and clear, it was going to be a good day for me.
That's classic.
And then if that sign was a little bit out of sync or it wasn't crystal clear, I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be one of those days. I'm battling in between ABs. I'm going to be flip-flopping. So
I'm trying to draw walks today. Exactly.
Yeah, it started to wear on me after a while mentally. I'm wondering for you, did you wake up in the morning? Did you have certain tells wherever you were living? Did you look at a certain flag or certain to find out, now I know what the wind's going to be like today?
No, I mean, you could tell by usually, like I said, you know, if it's chilly, good chance the wind's going to be blowing in. And honestly, Booney, like, this is back when I used to watch the weather the night before to find out what kind of a day we're going to have the next day. Okay, if it's going to be in the 50s or 60s, pretty good chance that wind's going to be blowing in. But if it all of a sudden got a little balmy, and you know, it can get balmy in the Midwest, you know, God, now you're playing 95 degrees with 90% humidity. I mean, you can pop a ball up and it would go out of the ballpark. So, yeah. It's such an interesting place to play. And, you know, back when we played, you know, the clubhouses were really small and the dugouts were, you know, made for guys that were 5'6", you know, back in the early, you know, 1900s. And so you'd stand up and hit your head on the freaking dugout and you're just like, God dang it. You know, and now you're trying to fight off a concussion and hit 95 miles an hour. But yeah, it was a special place. I got to play there for 13 years. I got to play with some unbelievable players. And the one thing about Cub fans, Booney, is no matter if you were hitting 220 or 320, if they saw that you were giving them a solid effort, if you were busting your butt for them, they loved you. They loved you. If you were lazy and didn't give a shit, then they wanted you out on the next plane.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Yeah, it is a special place. And there are certain venues that we played throughout our career. You know, Fenway didn't set up for me. That wall to left, I'd get it in my brain. It's just a pop up there. But my, right. You know, especially as my career went on, my strength was going the other way. Well,
yeah, you have a lot of juice to write.
Yeah, through. Fenway didn't lend itself for me. It was a deep right center field fence. And
it's short, a long ways out there to write.
Right. It would get me out of my rhythm because I know that wall's, you know, it seems like it's 100 feet away from me, but you know how that can get you out of your swing. So, yeah. But I loved, let's be honest, a day game at Fenway Park, nice day, pitching change. You're sitting there talking to your fellow infielder. I remember having some days there with Johnny Olerud and just looking around during a pitching change and go, Big Rude, do you realize how cool this is, what we do for a living? Because we don't always, when we're playing, we're grinding so hard about, you know, exactly. Who we facing tomorrow, where are we going, winning games. You don't really get times where you sit back until the end, it seems like, or after we're done playing, and really appreciate how lucky we were to be able to do what we did. I remember late in my career sitting at Fenway Park, afternoon game. I knew I was getting close to retiring. I think it was in 2005. And I was just looking around. For the first time, I kind of sat there and go, wow, this is so cool. My grandpa played here. I never thought about exactly. that. I thought about
you,
how many hits.
You come from such a baseball family.
Yeah, I always thought about how many, you know, I got to find a way to grind out some hits tonight. Pedro's on the mound. I got to get a knock and a walk. And I never really stopped to smell the roses, not to have a goofy cliche, but it is. Wrigley's one of those places. It's definitely a special place, a ton of history there. Right. And when you talk about pop-up versus biggest ballpark in the world, you're not kidding. I remember on a night game there one time, wind's blowing dead in. I hit the ball as far as I can possibly hit it. I mean, on a normal day. And I remember it hitting the basket over the 367 and going, that's all I got. And then, like you said, when the wind was reversed and it was a warm day, you could pop it up. As long as you got it up, it would just keep going.
Yeah, as so long as you got it on the barrel. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was the tale of two worlds.
So many times, like, you know, we call it pimping home runs or admiring home runs. And I watched hundreds of players in my playing days with the wind blowing in, hit a ball and just admire it at home plate.
Yeah.
And, you know, flip his bat in the air and start going into his trot, and the outfielder going back maybe two steps and make it. I mean, it's not even to the track.
And you better go.
And they'd come by and they'd have, you know, I'm playing first base, and they'd have these bewildered looks on their faces. And I'd just be, welcome to Wrigley, dude. And you know, but once again, I played, you know, in over 1,000 games there, you know, so you see the pop-ups that go out, and you also see, you know, the absolute bombs that are caught. And it's just crazy.
And some, a place that was like that too, a little bit, but you couldn't tell. It was more of, you had to guess, was Candlestick.
Oh, you played at Candlestick.
I was at Candlestick before the new stadium, and I remember some ball. I remember there one day, Jeff Kent hit a ball with the bases loaded, and I mean absolutely leaned on it. This ball's, he hit it 450 feet.
And he had pop, yeah.
And it went to the warning track and it got caught. And I
went,
my
Lord.
Oh my goodness. I haven't seen a ball hit that hard and not go out. And I, you know how some balls just cut through the wind when it's just back leg. But I saw that, I saw it there, but I could imagine Wrigley, same thing. It's like, you know, you're thinking as a hitter, well, okay, it's blowing in, but I can't hit that ball better. So that's still going to get out. And then right. It doesn't get out. And it's like, you, oh no, it just, that mental, that the, those wheels start turning.
And going back to Candlestick, first of all, Candlestick sucked. And
it did.
The worst part, yeah, I can deal with conditions, wind and bad playing surface. But the worst thing about Candlestick, and I think you're going to agree with me on this, Booney, having to walk all the way across the field to the clubhouse with those, I'm sorry, asshole San Francisco Giants fans throwing crap at you. You know, you're dodging oranges and you're dodging, you know, anything they can find, because you have to walk all the way across to the clubhouse and deal with those diehards that are there all night in the freezing weather. And God love them. I wouldn't have had it any other way.
And it's amazing too. People don't know this until the end. There was no toilet. There was no toilet in the visiting dugout. There was a urinal. There, but there's no toilet.
I had that one time. I had to go number two in about the third inning. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I had to wait until I knew I wasn't going to be up. I was up like sixth or seventh that inning. So I'm like, the last out was made for the Giants in the bottom half, and I'm playing first base. And instead of running into the dugout, the third base dugout there, I just sprint out to right field, go in, and Harvey Hosjerny, the clubhouse guy, he's looking at me like, Gracie, what do you want? I'm like, you know what I need to do. And I did what I had to do. And then I had my glove with me, you know, and all that. And I just ran out right to first base when the inning was over. So it's funny that you say that, because I had to deal with that one time.